I had to switch my name, that I was going to have this new name, which at that time was Renee Sterling, which I had to put a screeching halt to. I was like, all right, if we're going to play this game, I cannot be Renee Sterling. That sounds like a like low-class stripper or something. But the thing that always freaks me out about social media, is, which I'm sure is anyone's complaint, is just the negativity, I think, that lives on there. It's not even just the negativity. What's weird to me is the way that people want to... They just want to chime in on your life. And I wish that people would care about something more than what I'm doing or what Summer Rae is doing or what the Bellas are doing. Like,
oui, je parle un petit peu de français seulement.
Wow.
Just a little bit.
That's impressive.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. And today, our guest is the WWE performer, Renee Young, who does a number of broadcast roles for that company, including anchor pay-per-view pre-show panels on the WWE Network. She also has her own show on that network, WWE Unfiltered. You see her doing backstage interviews for the WWE. I'm always fascinated by WWE broadcasters, or I should say I've long been fascinated by them. Paul Heyman was one of my favorite guests on this podcast. He was unbelievable, and while he's not a quote-unquote traditional broadcaster, he has performed that role. Did a long interview not too long ago with Michael Cole, who has a really interesting background. So this position just fascinates me, understanding it's not traditional journalism at all. But it's interesting. It's an interesting broadcast position, so I'm really excited that Renee Young has agreed to be on this podcast. Prior to the WWE, when she was then Renee Paquette, she worked at the Score Network out of Toronto. That network is now owned by Rogers. Renee was an anchor and a host there. And Renee Young will, of course, be part of WrestleMania weekend, which culminates April 3rd with WrestleMania 32. From AT&T Stadium in Arlington. That will be on the WWE Network. And WrestleMania week is always a huge week in this country. Crosses over from, sort of the popular culture into the sports culture. So I'm excited for Renee Young to be on this podcast. Thank you so much for your support with the last couple podcasts, including Zach Lowe and Hubie Brown. As Bette Marston will note, I do not think we've gotten more praise for a podcast than Hubie Brown. It's not the most downloaded, but it's been downloaded a lot, and people just seem to have loved him. So we may have to bring him back in a couple months. That was sort of a basketball education. All right, but we make the rare segue from Hubie Brown to the WWE. And as promised, here is Renee Young of the WWE Network. Renee, you are the second WWE performer to be on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, and we are very happy that you're with us. Thanks for joining us.
I'm so happy to be here to join you guys. And to follow in the footsteps of Paul Heyman is not bad, but definitely big shoes to fill. So I'll try to do my best.
And by the way, on this podcast, Paul Heyman, if I remember correct, praised you. And I think he used the word fantastic, if I remember that. So that was high praise from him. Yeah.
So he is a very kind man, contrary to a popular belief, but he's always been such an amazing, kind of support system I've been able to tap into. Honestly, like as soon as I met him, he was just like kind of took me under his wing a little bit, and he's always been great.
Yeah, he's cool. I would love to walk on the streets in New York with Paul Heyman because he would be unrecognized, obviously, by a lot of people, but those who recognized him, it would be like seeing Mandela or Gandhi. It would just be like fascinating to be with him.
Totally. 100%.
All right, Renee, we'll start off with this. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
I think most of my friends don't really understand what I do. Most of my friends from like back home in Toronto, even when I was working for the Score, I don't think they ever understood that I was actually on TV. I don't think any of them ever watched what I was doing. Jerks. I think my family and stuff, I think even for them, it took them a while to wrap their head around what I was doing from the get go. But I think they would just describe it as, I don't know if they would, some people would say that I'm a reporter. I don't necessarily agree with that, But, you know, I'm kind of playing a character on TV as well as hosting the panels for all the WWE pay-per-views, and then doing the show Unfiltered on the WWE Network. So kind of wearing a bunch of different hats, I think. I don't think that people can necessarily describe what it is I do in one sentence.
That's interesting because, you know, I was going to ask you if you classify yourself as a broadcaster or an actress or a personality or a performer or a comedian or something else, but maybe you're all of the above.
You know what? I don't know because people assume that I am a broadcaster, but I don't really consider myself a broadcaster because I think, I don't know, I think that's a little rude for me to consider myself a broadcaster because I didn't do the training and traditional training that a broadcaster does. I've always considered myself just a person on TV that's a personality, and I come from more of an acting background. I come from acting in comedy and improv. And I've just been able to kind of infiltrate that stuff into my performances that I do with WWE and even the same one when I was with The Score. And I think as any good TV host, you kind of have to navigate through different waters from time to time. And it's up to you to figure those things out, whether I was talking about NBA, NFL, NHL, to the PGA, to now talking about WWE. I mean, those weren't necessarily things that were firsthand knowledge to me off the bat. And, you know, you kind of figure it out and make it a natural transition, I guess. Is that weird?
No, not at all. Renee, one of the before we get into how one gets to the WWE, which I think people are really fascinated by, I do want, you've been with that organization, or maybe I should say organization, like they would say in Toronto, since...
Oh, that's so nice of you.
Yeah, since 2012. What, from what you have discovered, what traits do you need to be a successful on-air person at the WWE?
I always think, like, my best thing that I lean on as a crutch is, like, I want to make myself, I want people to want to hang out with me. You know, I want people to want to welcome me into their living rooms and just to make things seem easy and comfortable. I think that's always been like a big key to being somebody on air, whether it's with WWE or it's elsewhere. I think the main thing with WWE though is still being knowledgeable and credible in what you're doing. So, you know, knowing certain information and actually having that stuff be firsthand knowledge. I don't know if that's something that is missing from time to time, from people that we've seen in the past, but I think, like, you know, being a legitimate fan and knowing what's going on, and I think just staying on top of things. You know, we always have so much stuff going on with WWE that sometimes it is hard to stay on top of it all, but that's just part of the job.
How long did it, at least in terms of like a sort of a self-evaluation, how long did it take you to feel like you fit into the fabric of this world
with WWE?
Yeah.
You know what, I felt right away. I never really had that much friction when I got to WWE. And I think that comes from having my show that I had in Toronto before with Aftermath, knowing WWE so well already. I already knew the storylines. I knew who all of the key players were. I knew how they spoke and how they want the product to be perceived. So I think as soon as I got into WWE, I think a lot of people didn't know where I came from, so I think people were a little bit shocked that I was ready to hit the pavement and go. There really wasn't much of a learning curve. I mean, there were certain things that I had to adjust to as far as, you know, losing my Canadian accent, which I truly believe I never had, to dressing a certain way, behaving a certain way. But also, you know, you grow up a lot in those years, too. I was 26. When I started at WWE and now being 30, it's like those are, you know, pretty big years that you change and grow as a person anyway.
Three decades now, Renee. That's big. It's a whole new ball game.
I know. Oh, my God. It's crazy. I still feel like I'm 18, though, mentally. So whatever that translates to.
People, as I mentioned, are fascinated by how one gets to the WWE. So you are at The Score. It's whatever, 2011, 2012. And you've clearly made a decision that you want to work in the States. So you start taking meetings and going on auditions for other jobs. I'm told that one of those was at ESPN. What do you recall about, I don't know if you went to Bristol or New York, but what do you recall about talking to people at ESPN and or auditioning at ESPN?
That was, you know what, it was actually a really great experience, and it was really funny because though I went to ESPN, I think it was, I don't know if it was the very end of the week, and then I had WWE at the very beginning of the next week, but they were literally days apart. And the WWE audition came up kind of out of the blue. I had been talking with ESPN for some time. This was as Michelle Beadle was getting ready to transition out of Sports Nation when she initially left.
Right.
So that's all I went in for was Sports Nation. I didn't go in for they were doing something for ESPNU, and I was talking to them kind of a little bit about that late night kind of show that they were trying to do.
Right.
But it was actually going in for Sports Nation. And the audition was great. I went in there and I spent the day. I was working really closely with Jamie Horowitz, who's now at Fox Sports. But he was fantastic, and he was always a really big supporter too. But I went in and had my audition. I spent the day researching stuff, making jokes for Sports Nation, and just kind of did like a little plug. And the audition actually went really well. All things looked like it was all systems a go. And then for whatever reason, they went with Carissa Thompson, who's no longer there either.
Right.
But
back with Jamie now at FS1.
What's that?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say Carissa Thompson now back with Jamie at FS1. So circle of life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, my audition at ESPN was great. I had been talking to them so much, and I don't know what exactly happened with them going with because I'm, you know, obviously working with Carissa Thompson and then having Michelle come back. So I think they were just in some odd transitions there with that show. But it all worked out so perfectly because, yeah, I mean, right after that, I went and auditioned at WWE. And honestly, I don't even really think I had a great audition at WWE. So luckily they saw something and wanted to still work with me. But yeah, I mean, they were days apart, and I didn't know at that point which one I was going to do.
Hmm. What? So when you go into WWE, and I'm guessing this, do you go to their corporate offices in Connecticut? And if so, what is the audition? Do they put you in a room and have you run lines like about the storyline? Do they do something else? It's I'm so fascinated by like what you would have to do to sort of get that job.
Well, it was interesting. Like I went in and, you know, coming from having Aftermath, I figured when they wanted to hire me or when they brought me in, I assumed that the job would be, that my role would be something similar to what I was doing in Toronto. And it really wasn't. But I came in and I did do a little bit of that. I actually auditioned with Matt Stryker. He was there at the time. Hmm. And I did a couple things with him on camera, just simple hosting duty kind of things, as if we were in a studio talking about what just happened on Raw or what had happened on a pay-per-view, just casual conversation. And then it was like boot camp almost. And then I had to go, they put me in a studio on headsets and did commentary. And that was my first time ever doing commentary. And I did that with Matt Stryker as well. And then the other thing I had to do was they gave me an object, a random, I think it was like a remote control or something, and told me I had to sell them on this product. You know, kind of improv on your feet. And I'm like, what is happening right now? I was very confused by the whole thing. But yeah, it really was like boot camp. I went in there so blindly, just knowing. I'm like, oh, I know WWE. I'm familiar talking about it. I think I can handle this. And I went in, I'm like, what the hell? I'm doing commentary. I'm doing, you know, I'm selling you this remote control. I was sitting down in the studio environment of just like, you know, kind of shooting the shit about WWE. That was great. That was easy. But the other stuff, I was like, oh, damn, maybe I'm not ready for this.
Does the interview process get to a point where you have to interact or impress the real top people like Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, et cetera? Or does it end at whatever the sort of broadcast department is and then they themselves make the decision?
I'm not sure how far those tapes go, or, I mean, Vince has such a heavy hand on everything. Between Vince and Kevin Dunn, it's like those two guys obviously have the ultimate call in who's being hired and who's not. I'm sure at that level, when I was coming in, I don't know how long I was under the radar or if they knew that I had been hired at that point. I honestly have no idea because I was only working with so many people. I wasn't sure how high up it got. But you know, Michael Cole has a big role in that stuff now.
Right. Yeah. And that, and I've interviewed Michael Cole once, and I know that he has a big role, not only in front of the camera anymore, but behind the camera in terms of development,
yeah,
and finding new talent. You, yeah. One of the things that's interesting is you told Chris Jericho when you did his podcast that you saw a voice coach for lack of a better phrase to Americanize your accent, and that was not just like a let's go for 2 hours seminar, correct? This was like a 10-week program to eradicate all of your Toronto like
stuff. Good use of the word eradicate.
Yes, yeah, to end your Canadianisms.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was really funny because honestly, I can hear it now if I talk to my mom or I'm talking to my brother or something. I can hear that Canadian accent more now, and sometimes I'll like, mostly if I say the word house to them, that they're like, what are you, from Texas? Why are you saying it like that?
Right.
So it's a bit of a trip, but yeah, I mean, I had to go see this vocal coach on Madison Avenue. I think it was like 10 weeks, an hour once a week, maybe it was twice a week. It was something crazy. Though I will say, even, you know, a couple weeks into it, I think I maybe took like 2 or 3 classes and she was like, you're fine. But, you know, for the sake of continuing this program, we'll finish it. But yeah, you just have to learn how to say your vowels differently, basically. It was very weird because I really never thought that I had a Canadian accent. And I knew what a Canadian accent sounded like, thinking of, you know, what my grandparents sound like out on the East Coast or somebody from Vancouver. But I always thought Toronto was so central. I thought I had a pretty non-regional dialect. Apparently I was wrong.
Do they give you sentences like Donald Trump goes to the Starbucks? Like, I'm like, what are the exercises?
I wish that they were like real proud American phrases like that.
Right.
But no, they give you different words. So each week we would work on a different type of vowel or grouping of vowels together, like O-U, E-I, whatever, however those vowels get paired together. But I would have these worksheets. I must have these somewhere in my house because I thought they were too funny to throw away. and they give you all different words and I'd have to go through them with the voice coach rather. And I would just like say the words. And then I would do the sentences, and then we would just sit there and talk to each other for about 10 minutes. And as soon as I would slip up on something, she'd call me out for it right away. It's like a slap on the wrist.
Right. That's interesting. Renee Young is a homage to Neil Young. That is, those who listen to the Jericho podcast will know how, that is how you got your professional name or your stage name for the WWE. How odd is it to have a professional name that is different than your birth name, just in everyday stuff? You go to the doctor, you write something for a letter. Is it surreal? Is it odd? Or at this point, is it commonplace or does it feel normal?
It's become a little bit more commonplace, but it is still weird to me. You know, I like when I first was told that I was going to have a different name, it freaked me out. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't like what? Why would I have a different name? Because, I mean, you know, when you get into entertainment, I actually remember the first time I ever signed up with like a really shitty talent agency. And they're like, you like fill out this questionnaire of like your name, stage name. And I was like, what? I can have a stage name? What the hell are you talking about? But I thought that was the coolest thing. Obviously, at that point, I was still sticking true to Renee Paquette. But yeah, when I was told that I had to switch my name, that I was going to have this new name, which at that time was Renee Sterling, which I had to put a screeching halt to. I was like, all right, if we're going to play this game, I cannot be Renee Sterling. That sounds like a like low-class stripper or something. I can't do that.
Right.
We've got to upgrade this. But yeah, it is weird to me. I mean, because even when I sign things for fans, I only just sign Renee. I can't write out Young. It's weird. I just sign Renee. But yet, even like the other day, I'm going through the process of my green card and stuff, and I had to go get fingerprinted. And they're like, do you use any other names? I'm like, oh, I guess I go by Renee Young. Like, some people would know me as that. So, sometimes it comes up that you have to write down both. And he's like, I think you're okay, but maybe just write it down in case.
That's interesting.
It's like, kind of official.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I don't know if many people would sort of realize that in your day-to-day life, that name flip is gonna come up. The first time that you were on WWE's – now, obviously, listen, you had done a lot of you had done a lot of on-air work at the Score, so you had reps in terms of being on air, but this is a different job. Were you nervous, or how nervous were you the first time you appeared on the WWE?
The first time I ever did anything with WWE was with Gene Okerlund doing the show Vintage Collection. And I was nervous for that. We were doing it in the studio, and this was a show that I had watched back in Canada. We used to play it on The Score. So I was like, oh my God, wait, I'm actually doing this show? Who approved this? I don't know what's going on right now. So I was nervous doing that. But, you know, we shot like maybe 4 episodes. And, you know, it was only the first couple takes, and then you realize that it's just, you know, it's a cool studio environment. Everyone there is having fun, and we're all on the same team. So there was no nerves kind of shortly into it, first couple takes. But when I did my first backstage interview, it was with Randy Orton and Sheamus, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I was a little bit nervous for that, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you are given a script for what your question is. I'm like, oh, I can handle just having this one question. It's not, you know, rocket science. So I did that, and that was fine. But the first time I did a panel, I was really nervous too, because I literally had no idea what I was doing or what was going on.
Get into
that. Just, you know, I wasn't. What's that?
Actually, my timing is off on this interview, Beth. I've interrupted Renee now twice. That's usually, I'm usually one and out on that.
So that's fine.
That's my bad. So basically, I was just going to say, anyone who is who's a long term wrestling fan or a long time wrestling fan knows who Gene Okerlund is, and kind of knows his genius for for interviews back in the, you know, the real eras of the 80s and the 90s, et cetera. I mean, he, I think, is as much responsible for the popularity of the WWE, given his work with Hogan and Andre the Giant, Roddy Piper and those guys, et cetera. Did, in terms of working with him, did you pick up anything that you were able to sort of like learn from his unique genius? Because this is a guy who never, if I'm correct about this, he didn't take any bumps in the ring. He did everything during his wrestling career essentially by his interview style and his brain. He never, generally speaking, used his physicality at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the thing with Gene is, like, he's just such a charming man. You can't not love him. And I think that's, you know, I think that's something that anyone on air, I don't know if that's something you learn, but I don't think you can learn to be charming or learn to be likable, but that's just a quality that he has. So any shred of that that I can obtain from him, I obviously would love to be able to have any bit of that magic quality that he has. But, you know, I think just working with him in a studio, he is such a cool guy. He's so sharp. He's so funny. He's everything that you would hope that Gene Okerlund is like for fans that have watched him for so long. He's a blast to hang out with. And the person he is on air versus the person he is in real life, I mean, they're just shades apart. And I think that's really an essential thing for people that are on television versus who they are in real life. They really shouldn't be that much different.
That's interesting. You, one of the things you told Jericho was that you liked having an outline when you are on camera, as opposed to a specific script. You like the ability to react, to improv.
Yeah.
How often are you afforded that versus something that is truly, totally scripted?
I mean, those opportunities come up once in a while. I mean, it's definitely difficult because, you know, the way that the backstage interviews are set up is like, I say my line right off the top. And other than that, I mean, I usually don't have many lines past that. So there's not a lot of room for improv. And, you know, I don't really want to throw other people under the bus by me trying to get in my own improv lines of whatever I want those to be, you know. But my improv mostly comes in the form of like eye rolls and looks and little reactions. You know, I mean, even the other week on SmackDown with Kevin Owens saying that me and AJ Styles have the same haircut. It's like, getting the little things of like a second where I'm like, oh shit, do we have the same haircut? And just kind of like letting that thought process happen while I'm looking at AJ. It's like, it's more little things like that that I'm able to do as far as the backstage interviews go. But you know, when it comes to the panels, those, we know what, where we're going with it as far as what packages, what matches we're going to be talking about. But the rest of it is not scripted. I mean, we're having a conversation like you and I are right now. So those opportunities come in there a lot more.
Right. And obviously the Unfiltered show is definitely not scripted. I saw a couple of those over the last week, and that's very clearly much you. Although it's interesting because I feel like the show has evolved over the course of, I think it's 20 episodes, or you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw like the Seth Rollins one, which was number one. Mm-hmm. And which actually is pretty funny, actually, if you go back and look at that. It's always those food shows are always interesting to me, no matter the setting. And then if you go later on to some of, like, you know, the episodes like 18, 19, 20, it's the show itself has sort of evolved a little bit. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the goal is always to keep moving and trying to make the show better and bigger. And, you know, the show is going to grow even more in the next coming months once we start getting Unfiltered back on the WWE Network, because it's now moving into a 30-minute time slot. So we're going to make it feel like a real show, which is really cool. But, yeah, you know, the show did evolve. And I think even for myself, you know, starting to do Unfiltered, I knew where I wanted the show to go, but I needed to let everyone else trust me that I was okay to do that. And I think, you know, keeping the interviews a little more of a straight shoot in the beginning. And then, you know, in some of the other ones, it's like we're sitting down having a beer and kind of shooting the shit. That's the kind of show I want to do. Is, you know, every now and then you might have like a bleeped swear word, having a beer. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm interested in doing. I want shows to be fun. I work with so many fun, cool people, and I want them to be showcased in that light as well. I mean, there's so many people that sit down and do Unfiltered, and I get so many tweets of people being like, oh, that person's not a total dick. So for some people, that's great. For some people, it's not great. It depends.
The, you know, you're obviously very young. You're 30 years old. You're at the beginning of your professional career. But I ask this knowing that you are in a unique company now. How much, if at all, concern for you is there regarding getting typecast as someone who could only appear on WWE-style programming?
I mean, I think that that is a concern no matter where you are. I don't think that's just a WWE thing. I think it depends on what it is that you want to do with your career. If you want to work in, you know, you say you want to work in, you know, sports, covering basketball, football, all that stuff, versus being in WWE, we've seen so many different people be able to make that transition. But if you want to do, you know, say you want to go work on Extra or you want to work on The View or something, I mean, there, you know, that would be a different transition, absolutely. But I've, you know, my favorite thing with WWE is that it is the marriage of sports and entertainment. And I think being able to let people see that entertainment side, for myself as well. I mean, that's definitely a key thing. But I try not to sweat stuff like that too much. I feel like if you're good, you're good, and you can kind of get a foot in the door one way or the other if you need to. But, you know, I also think there's so many things with WWE, that opportunities that I keep being given and different things that I see that I can do with WWE, that I'm trying to, you know, position that stuff.
I bet you and your agent. How taxing or difficult is the travel schedule? Because this is a company that travels a lot.
You know what? It never bothers me that much. The last couple weeks, it's been a little bit tough. But, you know, when you're leading up to WrestleMania and we're getting so close to WrestleMania 32, that, you know, you might have other things here and there. You might not make it home one week. But I don't find it bad. I'm okay living in a hotel. I'm okay being in the car. I mean, the flights to Las Vegas are a little bit longer now, so I feel that on my body when I get off.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I love being at home. I love being in my house. I love my house. But, you know, being on the road, and it's always been fun to me. It's always been something as like a kid that I always thought would be cool, is like living that lifestyle of having to fly places and having to be in a different city. So that luxury, it hasn't worn off. There's times that it is tough and you feel like you're eating like crap, or you need to like make it to the gym and, you know, your skin's dehydrated and all this stupid shit you have to worry about as you get older. But yeah, I like being on the road. It's kind of a little, you know, it's like a tramp lifestyle. Just go from one town to the next, and you find your little places in each town that you like. And we hit so many of the same cities year after year that you become so familiar with what the hotel's like, what the, you know, what everything's going to be like.
Did you ever imagine as a teenager that you'd be living one day in Las Vegas?
No, not at all. It's still weird to me. I'm like, who moves to Las Vegas for one? it's a weird thing, but it's actually like more startlingly normal than I would have thought. I mean, living out in Henderson, it's like, it's quiet. When I thought of Vegas, I'm like, ew, it's going to be like this strip. People, there's going to be hookers everywhere. It's going to be a mess. But like, I go to a great little yoga studio. My grocery store is really nice. And they're really the only two places I'm bouncing back and forth between. But yeah, I mean, from Toronto, it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to live in New York. That makes sense. I lived in LA before. I might end up living in LA again at some point. But now that I've like set down some roots in Vegas, it's, yeah, I never would have thought that in a million years.
I like it. You're like Chamber of Commerce for Las Vegas, Renee. Good job there. social media obviously is very big for your personal branding, and the the WWE has done an amazing job in terms of social media. It's obviously a very big charter for them. The downside, of course, is that you personally are going to take a lot of shit on it for multiple reasons, from being a broadcaster to your current relationship to being a woman, not just a woman broadcaster, but a woman on social media. I've had many women in sports on this podcast. We've talked about this. It's always, to be quite frank, kind of a shit show. And I wonder for you, can you define what social media is for you, given that where you work, you really can't avoid it or not be part of it. It's too important to your company. So how do you navigate that world knowing that you have to be part of that world?
I mean, you're right. It is a shit show. It's a total shit show. But parts of it can be cool. And I think as soon as you can kind of relax about it, it becomes less of this daunting thing. I mean, I used to have a lot of fun on social media. I used to want to interact with people a lot. I used to tweet things that I certainly couldn't tweet now. It's tough because you do want to use it as your own personal brand to be like, oh, this is the stuff that I'm really doing. Or stuff that I find funny, or maybe something that could be crass or maybe not PC or whatever it is that, you know, for me, it's always just a dumb joke is really what I like to use social media for. But now, you know, once your followers get up, you're working for a big company like WWE, you do have to watch what you're doing and what you're saying. And the fan interaction sometimes can be absolutely amazing, and other times it's a nightmare. I mean, people feel very entitled to want to tell you about your performance, about your life, about your relationships. Like people have an odd ownership over your personal life and about your thoughts and stuff that you're putting out into social media. But the thing that always freaks me out about social media is, which I'm sure is anyone's complaint, is just the negativity, I think, that lives on there. It's not even just a negativity. What's weird to me is the way that people want to, they just want to chime in on your life. And I wish that people would care about something more than what I'm doing or what Summer Rae is doing or what the Bellas are doing, like, which is great. We're all happy to have, I shouldn't use them as necessarily examples. I'm not saying they believe what I'm saying, but I wish that people would care more about their own lives and go, you know, hang out with your family, hang out with your friends, go pick up a hobby rather than, you know, please follow me, like my picture, please notice me. Oh my God, mom, queen, dad, whatever these people are tweeting. It's bizarre. It's this weird subculture of like caring too much about strangers' lives.
Do you think because so much of what you're part of is storyline that adds to it, that people, because there are people in the WWE who are performers at heart, that you lose the, if you're on, for at least when it becomes negative, that people see you not as individuals, but as sort of part of a larger storyline?
Yeah, I mean, that happens sometimes. I don't find that happens to me so much because I'm not involved in any storyline.
Right.
So I don't really deal with that too much, but I can certainly see where the other performers, like the superstars, get involved in that. And it is a tough thing. And also with WWE, it's like you do want to maintain that character. And I think that there is definitely some importance to that. But with social media, it's hard. You don't want to maintain living as this character 24/7. But, you know, for the credibility of your character on television, sometimes it is beneficial. I think it's case by case for each person of what their character is like, who they are, what they're trying to portray to everybody.
there were obviously a ton of people when I put out for questions for you who wanted me to ask you about your relationship away from the cameras with Dean Ambrose. I'm going to only ask one thing here, and I will totally respect if you want to punt on it or don't want to go down that road, because this is not a show about relationships by any means. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting to me that so often the people who are really great within professional wrestling are those who seem to live the storyline full time away from the camera. Yeah. As well. You've appeared on Total Divas. Good job, by the way, mm-hmm. expanding the Renee Young brand to E. And obviously, you're on the WWE Network. You've done a lot of stuff. Obviously, Dean is a major, major player now in that place, and his star is rising, and he's just, on a personal note, phenomenal to watch. So how blurred are the lines from what is real versus what is part of a larger storyline when you have a relationship in that world?
I mean, for him and I, we don't talk about our relationship really ever. I mean, yes, people are aware that we're together, but aside from that, it's like we both have different jobs. We both do different things. And it's, you know, it's really important for us to keep our personal life safe away from what other people are able to see. And, you know, I think for him as well, you know, he has his thing that he's doing as Dean Ambrose, and he, you know, he's very true to that. And then for me, I mean, I'm more of an open book than he is. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to navigate those waters a little bit differently. But, yeah, I mean, we are just very private about our lives together. I mean, yeah, we were just on the last episode of Total Divas together, but you didn't really see too much of us.
Right. Are you
so it was not too bad.
Are you circumspect about placing any photos of yourselves on social media and it within the public for the same reasons?
Yeah, I would never do that. No, because, you know, people, I don't know, I would never want to subject my relationship or let people have any opinion other than what they've formed in their own minds, and that's their deal, not mine. So I don't feel the need to show people what him and I are doing in our real lives. It's not for them.
All right.
I just don't want to put it out there to them.
I appreciate you answering that very much. Thank you. I consider Stephanie McMahon a genius on-air performer. She and Paul Heyman, to me, are on the Mount Rushmores of people who, at least at the moment, who are not necessarily in the ring, but incredible in-ring performers. How intense are Heyman and Stephanie? You've been on air with them in the midst of either interviewing them or watching them do what they do. And I knew when you came on, I wanted to ask you this. How, like, when you're that close to them, are they really, like, are they really inhabiting this character so it's a little scary that they have become that person? Because obviously behind the scenes, I know both of them, you could shoot the shit with them. They're very cool. But it's amazing to me when they are on camera just how on point they are.
It's crazy. Seeing it up close and personal, it is. It's a little terrifying. So, you know, when Steph is in her mode, and I have done some interviews with Steph where she is flipping out. She is doing the Stephanie McMahon deal where she is being a bad bitch. And it is so scary to see in real life. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't even handle it. If you were yelling at me like this, I don't know what I would do. And same with, you know, working with Paul Heyman. I've done so many backstage interviews with Paul where a lot of the times I honestly don't know what he's going to do, what he's going to say, if he's going to, you know, have some kind of a verbal personal attack on me or scrutinize me for something. It's like, oh, damn, was that real? What? But, yeah, they're both just incredible performers. They're incredible improvisers. They're both very, very smart, which is, you know, that's a no-brainer. They are geniuses. They're so good at what they do. And it is very fun to watch someone at that caliber do what they do.
Renee, how competitive, if it is indeed competitive, is it between broadcasters for airtime? Is it, you know, at certain places like ESPN, Fox Sports 1, even though you're colleagues, a lot of times it's competitive. You want certain shows and you want airtime. Is it competitive with the WWE broadcasters, or would you say it's more collegiate?
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's like anything. We all work on television. We all have a certain amount of ego of what, you know, what we're trying to do ourselves. But me personally, I don't really feel that way. I mean, yeah, so if I'm taken off a show or I'm not doing something, I'm definitely going to be like, hey, wait, why? But like, I don't, that's more so from like a standpoint of like, why can't I do that? Or why wouldn't I be someone to do that job? But it's never towards the person that's actually doing it. I don't feel that competition amongst the broadcasters. It's more so, why would that, you know, how do those positions become available? Who decides who gets them and who's best for those jobs? But it's not, I would never be like, oh, screw Corey Graves, I want to do this show. Like, I don't ever feel that way. I mean, as much as I do have like a competitive streak in me, but I also just feel like, I feel like there's always room for everyone to do other things. There's so many different platforms with WWE that like, I don't feel it has to be petty over who gets to do what.
All right, one more from me, and then we'll finish up with some questions that I got from people. As someone who has worked with a very traditional outlet in the Score, or at the Score, I should say, which is now owned by Rogers in Canada, how important is it for the WWE to get mainstream attention at outlets like ESPN, Sports Illustrated, Fox, et cetera? Does the company need that to continue to grow, or is the WWE universe in itself enough in terms of publicity and stuff?
Well, I mean, I think for anyone, you don't want to just be your own insular property. And as big as WWE is, I mean, of course you want other people and other outlets to pick up what you're putting down, you know? I mean, to have any extra coverage on anything, I think is always beneficial. But, you know, to have people like ESPN and Sports Illustrated to have that kind of attention is great, because, I mean, we all do essentially work in the same vein. I mean, they are top athletes, you know, at WWE. So to cover them and plug them into these other outlets is great. But, yeah, I mean, I think the more the merrier. I don't think anyone should ever have the mindset of like, oh, we've got this, we don't need anybody else. I think that's not really a smart way to think. But yeah, I think being able to be plugged in any other outlet is very beneficial.
All right. So we'll finish up with Renee Young with the many questions that you forwarded. And generally speaking, people kept it clean, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe it's the Canadian. They were just being kind to a Canadian for an American
That's
outlet.
That's actually very possible. They're all from my mom.
Who is the most interesting person you've met within your current job? Maybe that's almost too broad and making you choose somebody, but that's the first question.
The most interesting person that I've met.
Have you met Justin Trudeau?
What's that?
Have you met Justin Trudeau, your old prime minister?
No, I wish. I have not. I have not met him, unfortunately. You know, I honestly would probably have to go with someone like Paul Heyman. I mean, just from a business standpoint and from a performance standpoint, he just nails it on all levels. And to sit down and talk to him, he is always this beacon of delicious ideas.
Nice. He'll be very happy with that. He may even use your content. Knowing him, he'll use that content on his website somehow to make money. how often do you work directly with Vince McMahon?
Not that often. I mean, I see him in the hallways, and I'll receive information from him if there's certain things that I should be doing differently or certain verbiage that needs to be used. I mean, I worked with him a lot more when I was doing Tough Enough, obviously. I mean, that was, you know, we were working together all the time on that. But as far as being at regular TVs for Raw and SmackDown, I think, you know, he's got a couple bigger things to worry about usually at TV than what I'm up to.
Would you ever get in the ring?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the entertainment side, that's where my heart lies, is doing the entertainment stuff. So if that's where this all went, to somebody wanting me to have a match, do I think that I would be a diva? No, but I mean, to take, you know, do like some Vicky Guerrero stuff and take a couple bumps, I would totally be down. I think it'd be great.
Nice. And this leads to another question. Who would be your tag team partner if you had to wrestle any divas past or present?
Gosh, I would probably have to go with Lita. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Lita. You kind of have to. She's a badass in the ring. She's a good friend of mine, and you know, we get to do some panels together sometimes. So that we already have that. We have that part of it down. The physicality, I'll leave to her, though.
is there one person who stands out as being really, really different off camera versus their on screen performance?
That is very different.
Yeah. Like, is there one person who like immediately comes to mind? Like, what you see on camera when they are in their personal space, they are 180 degrees different.
I mean, yeah, it's hard for me to not say Dean Ambrose, but I think like, gosh, that is a tough one. I mean, people, you know who I will say is Summer Rae. Summer Rae's pretty different in real life than she is on camera.
That's interesting.
She's very funny, and she's very smart. Not to totally throw her under the bus, but I mean, sometimes she just is a hair flipping,
right,
doing her hot girl thing. But she's got a good brain on her.
That's good. Well, yeah, I mean she's a good actress. Do you hope to be on commentary for Raw in the future?
I think that if that opportunity comes up, I'm definitely down. But right now, you know, I'm really enjoying working on Unfiltered and working on doing some more show type shows. You know, I like being a TV personality. And if that's something that I can work into doing on commentary and get better at doing commentary, then yeah, I would definitely love to take that opportunity. I think having a chick on commentary would be really cool. And I loved doing it when I was doing it because I did get to mess around with some improv and I got to have some fun out there, but I didn't have enough time to fully develop my character as a broadcaster on commentary.
All right, a couple more here. How often do you return to Canada?
Not often enough. I'm actually landlocked right now because of my visa, so I didn't get to go up to Roadblock when we just had it.
Oh, wow.
But I was up there just before the week of New Year's. I was up in Canada. So, you know, every maybe like 6 months or something, I don't get home that often. I'm a bad family member. I need to get everyone else to come out to Vegas.
if I was heading up there and I had to have one dish, like what would it be? Poutine, ketchup, chips. What would be you as a true blooded Canadian? What do you recommend in terms of Canadian cuisine?
So as a true blooded Canadian, I would have to say, I mean, obviously you'd have to start out the day with some good Canadian bacon.
Right.
That's essential. Canadian bacon, a snack would be ketchup chips, followed by all dressed chips, followed by zesty Doritos.
Yummy. Wow.
I would definitely, oh, they're the best.
Right. By the way, so far you've described the diet of a 16-year-old, but keep going.
Don't judge me. a poutine, definitely, and maybe like a butter tart. A butter tart is very Canadian as well.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've been to Montreal, right? You know, those of us in New York probably have to see that the best bagels in the world are in Montreal over our city, which is...
They are.
It's hard to admit that,
100%.
But it's true. Yeah, I agree with that.
No, it's absolutely true.
Yeah, Fairmont is bagels, I think, is like the famous place up there, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the famous bagel place is, and they've also got that like smoked meat place, too, that's no joke. Montreal is really cool. I love Montreal.
Montreal's a great city. Do you speak French or just English?
Oui, je parle un petit peu de français seulement.
Wow.
Just a little bit.
That's narrow. That's impressive.
I did take it all through to grade 12, but I only retained so much of it. Mm. However, you know what? I actually went to Paris last year, or year before, and my French came very in handy.
Beautiful. Great city. One of the great cities of the world. Can't go there.
Yeah.
All right, final two. For Unfiltered, you've had Schwarzenegger, Wiz Khalifa, if I remember, Dolph Ziggler, obviously. Seth Rollins, actually. Even that number one episode, I find Seth Rollins amusing, so I think that's why I like that.
He is.
Unfiltered.
That is great.
If I can give you, let's say, like two or three dream guests, they don't have to be from the WWE, who would they be for Unfiltered?
Oh, gosh. I would love to do an Unfiltered with... I would love to do one with Sophia Amoroso from Nasty Gal. She has that clothing company. I find her very fascinating. I read her book, and she's really cool. I would love to have Chelsea Handler because I adore her very much. And my last one, maybe let's go. Oh, gosh. It is tough thinking of dream guests. Shaq. I've always loved Shaq.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
That's very random. I think you could get him, by the way. That's the beauty of
I'm a Shaq woman.
Yeah. Tell your PR people to call Turner Sports. I'm fairly certain you can get him anytime you want. All right. And then finally, Renee, and thank you for the time. We appreciate that today. If I could give you the opportunity to do a parallel job in television, broadcasting, et cetera, as you're still doing your WWE job. So you keep that, but I'm mm-hmm. letting you do something else within the industry. What would sort of be your dream job within the larger broadcasting industry if you could do that in addition to the WWE?
Wait, can you be my agent and make that happen? That would be great.
Let's see if I can do that.
You know, I would actually like. I would love to do Kelly Ripa's job. That's one that would definitely be awesome.
Would it have to be Strahan too, or would you want to pick your like a new co-host with you?
Oh, I'll keep Strahan all day. Strahan's awesome.
All right, I could see Renee Young and Paul Heyman as like perhaps a new Kelly and Michael for maybe.
I would do that too
for the insane.
I can handle
set.
That. I mean, if I brought in Gene and made him my new Regis, I'd be down for that, too.
You would know this. Is there, like, a Kelly and Michael version in Canada? Like, is there a, like, are two people doing that role for CTV or CBC or something?
Not really. There's, like, breakfast television, but it's not anything like Kelly and Michael. They really have that cornered off. I mean, we all just watch Kelly and Michael back home, too.
Oh, really? God, I love Canada. I love Canadian television. It's just, it's better than the U.S. They're just,
isn't it great?
Incredibly polite people. Toronto's an amazing city. All right, listen, I could talk about this all day, Renee, but you have a real job that you need to get to. Renee Young is one of the broadcasters, performers for the WWE. You see her all over that network. You'll see her as part of WrestleMania week. She has her show Unfiltered on the WWE Network. As she said, it's coming back for third. What do we call the second season or third season?
It'll be the second.
Second season, right. She continues to move up the WWE chain, despite having the diet of a 16-year-old. That's a very impressive, actually, career arc that she's had.
Well, there's a veggie tray in there once in a while.
I appreciate that. All right, listen, Renee, I've really enjoyed your work on that channel. I think you're very talented, and Paul Heyman said you're great to work with, and I have no doubt he was telling me the truth. We appreciate you joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, and continued success.
Thank you so much.
All right, back in the studio, wrapping up, my thanks to Renee Young of the WWE. You know, again, I just happen to love the broadcasters of the WWE.
Also love Canada, Daesh.
I do love Canada as well. So she's a great guest for that. But I'm just fascinated by that world. Like they're not the traditional broadcasters that we have on this podcast. And they're not journalists, obviously. But it's just a very interesting like little sub-world because they do these things that are traditionally done by broadcasters, yet it's scripted and it's acting. So it's like it's just really interesting to me. And then they live these lives outside of the WWE, but yet people think that they're characters. So it's like a whole weird, fascinating little world.
Yeah, I really liked how she gave us that little bit of insight when she was applying for her green card, and she said, "Well, some people call me Renee
Paquette."
Young.
Right.
Her real name's Renee Paquette.
Right.
She said, "Some people know me as Renee Young. This is just my TV name."
Right. It's weird,
but I should probably throw it in there anyway.
Right.
So.
Which she does. I mean, I think I would think more people know her now as
Renee Young.
But yeah, she gave really interesting stuff just about. You know, how one gets the job at the WWE, and gave you a sense of sort of how to work within the scripted world and when you could do some improv. And she's just Paul Heyman said this when he was a guest on the podcast. Renee Paquette is very accessible to the viewer. You kind of like hanging out with her And that, I think, is a transferable skill in broadcasting.
She's relatable as well.
Well, the thing, too, is, you know, I didn't know this. She interviewed for Michelle Beal's job. Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
That was interesting.
Yeah, that's news to me. All right. Our thanks to Renee Young. WrestleMania is coming up. And so Renee is going to be busy. WrestleMania coming up April 3rd on the WWE Network, pay-per-view, et cetera. So that she'll be part of that network's coverage that week. That's obviously like Super Bowl week for them. So, my thanks to my previous podcast guests as well, including Zach Lowe and Hubie Brown. My thanks to my producer, Bette Marston, and let me give more thanks to the long laundry list of people who have made these podcasts at SI possible. Dan Bloom of Panoply, Ben Eagle, Paul Fichtenbaum, Ryan Hunt of Sports Illustrated. For my producer, Bette Marston, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Wrote out some goals and stuff. I wanted to get drafted as high as I can. I mean, that's coming up. We'll see.
After the regular season, after the bowl season, there is another season, draft season. As soon as the confetti rains down on the NCAA champion, a crop of college football players officially become NFL prospects.
This is your one time, man, one chance we got to show what we can do, man. Preparation's the key.
Hundreds of hopefuls begin a painstaking job interview, monitored worldwide, with millions of dollars hanging in the balance. Their ambition is no longer winning a title. These players' new goal is to convince 32 NFL front offices that they cannot be missed. The road to the pros isn't the same for everyone. For some, it's a foregone conclusion.
I think the guys last year, that first-round picks like Todd Gurley, they set a good standard for the younger generation coming up, and I think we're going to bring it back.
Other small school prospects simply hope to be selected, with YouTube highlights serving as their primary pre-draft type.
Anton sacked by Javon Hargraves. I mean, he is just taken down. But the Bulldogs, Javon Hargraves, taking over.
There are stars derailed by injury.
His season is over following surgery. Terrell Pera torn meniscus in his right knee.
Blue chip talents overshadowed by red flags.
Yeah, it was like, yo, we're going to this party. Well, yeah, let's pop this before we go. You know what I mean? Probably going to be better, you know? And, I mean, I thought, well, everybody else here is doing it. I guess I can do it.
QBs trying to prove they can become the face of an NFL franchise.
Just tune out the noise and just really focus in on getting better and doing what you need to do to be the most prepared you can.
And players changing positions in order to save their draft stock.
Yeah, he's talented, man. His film doesn't lie. But yeah, man, he's a tremendous athlete. He can play a lot of places on the field, but he's definitely a quarterback. That's where he needs to be at.
I'm Ben Glicksman. And over the coming weeks, Sports Illustrated's team of reporters will give you a behind-the-scenes look into one of the craziest and most compelling events in sports. The draft goes deeper than seven rounds. Each pick is a player. Each player has a story. Get ready. It's draft season.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.